Listen.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Next Fan Up. I am Pod Vader. I'm joined by two superfans this week. It is Ron, our Dolphins superfan, and Davey, our Vikings superfan. I will say hello to them in just a moment. Just want to apologize for the sound quality this week. We're experiencing some technical difficulties, so we had to roll back a little bit. Hopefully we'll be back on our nice clear signal next week, but for now, we felt that the content was too good to not give to you, so we are giving it to you the only way we know how. And trust me, just because the audio may not be there, we did not skimp on the content. Ron is our Dolphin superfan. He's one of our more knowledgeable guys. He's also one of our best talkers. Hello, Ron. How are you today?
What's up, everybody? What's going on? Fins up.
Fins up. I will never. You'll never hear me say that ever again. I just had to repeat.
I understand. I you shouldn't say it as a Pats fan.
And Davey is our Viking superfan. Davey, it's been a while. I don't think have I talked to you at all this year?
Not since the preseason previews, I don't think. It's been a while. I think also, by the way, we should note that the Patriots superfan Patrick was supposed to be on, and it seems that you kind of skipped over shaming him for skipping out. Just wanted to publicly call him out on that one, huh?
I was getting there, but you beat me. You beat me to the punch.
I had to do it for him because I take pleasure in giving him some jabs all the time. So it had to happen.
Patrick should feel shame, and hopefully Patrick will join us while we're recording this. Although I have a feeling he's probably busy. Most of the guys are at work at this time. I get it. I understand. Greg, who's been on with us for like a record number of weeks in a row, was unable to join us this week. And that's quite all right. We're going to have a good time anyway here with Ron and Davey. We also have three big superfan battles for you this week. The Browns and the Bengals, the Packers and the Panthers, and the Broncos and the Colts are on tap for our superfan battles. If you want to apply to be a superfan, all you need to do is send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. By the way, you can use that email address as well to reach out to us. Ask us some questions, tell us things that you want to hear, make requests for super fans to come on the show. I'm sure there's guys that you haven't heard. We did that last week with Monty. Of course, that was through Twitter, and you can tweet at us at NFU Podcast on Twitter. Monty, our Raider super fan, was requested by a fan of his on Twitter, so we can get the super fans that way. And if you want to check out each individual write-up of the superfan battles, you can go to our Facebook page. Just search Next Fan Up on Facebook, or if you're not there right now, you type in facebook.com/NFU podcast, brings you right to our fan page. The podcast will be pinned right top of the page, so you can check all of that out there. All right, let's get to our superfan battles now. We will start with the Thursday night game. If you are listening to this after Thursday and you want to skip ahead, you want to fast forward 7 minutes, starting right now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is a super battle between, from England, we have Simon. How are you doing, our super fan for Cincinnati Bengals?
I'm doing great. I mean, Team 7-0 can't be better than that, so yeah, pretty good right now.
Nice, but I mean, this could be the dreadful day. I know you're very shaking in your boots at this moment because you have to face the Cleveland Browns. We have Rob Kohler, the Browns super fan. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm doing good. Are you ready for some Johnny football?
So, with Johnny football, tell us, how is your team going to win this game, Rob? If you have any chance at all, if this is going to truly be a super battle, how do the Browns pull this win out?
So, under the bright lights of Thursday Night Football, Andy Dalton is going to wilt and throw 6 interceptions to some unnamed DBs because our whole secondary is hurt with concussions. But somehow they're going to intercept it and run them back for touchdowns, and that's how we win.
Simon, how are you feeling about your team? If you were going to pull this off, how are you guys going to do it?
Well, not by lying to myself about how bad my team is, but I think, in all seriousness, I think Sunday was a strange game. I don't think it was our best reflection of us as a team, especially offensively. I'm interested to see if Cleveland bring the heat to us and see how that impacts the game. But I think it's, you know, we've got a lot of weapons, spread it around. Let's try and to establish the run, because the Cleveland Browns have been terrible against the run. So I'm feeling pretty good that if we can get a few things going, that will be okay. But yeah, I think just continue to do what we've done. And I think if Johnny Football's in a game, let's just hope he's better than the last time that he played against us, because he scored 0 points in that game and it was quite an easy win for us.
So other than Johnny Football, Rob, as you look at your team, I know we're not going to get many chances to have the Browns on a Super Battle, so we get to hear about your progress. How is the team? What are the positive spots? Is there anything for us to look forward to on Thursday night?
Yeah, the positives for the Browns are, I really think Duke Johnson really stood out. He hasn't, you know, nobody's been rushing well for the Browns, but as a receiver, a running back receiver, he's been really great. He averages about 7 or 8 catches a game, and you know, gets close to about 100 yards receiving every game. So the dump off pass has been really working for McCown, and you know, with Manziel, I don't know if that will be the same game plan. I hope so, because that's how we've really been moving the football, and then just throw it to Casey Barnage in the end zone, and he seems to catch everything. So those two positions, the tight end and the running back with Duke Johnson, the rookie, coming along, has looked good. All of my hope for the defensive line and the linebackers has just wilted starting in game one. So everything we saw in the preseason, where I was getting all hyped up about Danny Shelton and the nose tackle and us finally being, you know, maybe middle of the road, stopping the run, that has all kind of gone to waste, and I don't see any bright lights on the defense. You know, Hayden's been hurt way too much, and you know, our safeties have turned into their evil versions of themselves and just been horrible. So defense really, really needs a lot of work. But on offense, you know, I've been pleased. McCown has, you know, throws over 300 yards pretty much every game, so it's been looking okay.
On the other side, Simon, as you look at your team, where are the weaknesses? If you see this team losing, when's it going to happen, and how's it going to happen?
I think when it happens might be the Sunday night game that we've been flexed into against the Cardinals. I also think the game against Houston, which is after this game, is a potential banana skin. I'm not sure it's the phrase you guys use over in the States, but yeah, one that we could potentially lose, because it's obviously, again, prime time, Monday Night Football. Hoyer was the reason that I think the Browns won last year. I think he was really efficient, really smart with the ball. And, you know, the way that you exploit the Bengals, and I think Rob's team have got a few things that kind of do this. I think running backs have had some success, and I think that can continue. Tight ends have always done well against our offense. Like Heath Miller, for example, had a huge game against us on Sunday. So there are ways to exploit us. I think our secondary still makes too many bad errors, and there's a lot of busted coverages and so on. But I think if you can, if you get ahead of the Bengals, you've got to put us away, because we will stick around. So, I mean, the Browns are going to start fast and play fast throughout, you know, and we've got to, you know, we have to make a few errors, I think, to be out of the game. But I think, yeah, exploit us through running the ball, playing control defense, getting after Dalton if you can. And that's kind of been the recipe for, you know, the last 4 or 5 years I've had to beat the Bengals. It's not changed. It's just teams aren't getting away from us outside of Seattle. And when we have got away from us, we've always caught up. So, you know, the team's got a lot of resilience, I think, is the key word that the guys have been using. So I think if you can try and wilt some of that resiliency, I think you've got a chance to beat us.
And what are you saying the final score on Thursday night?
Yeah, I predicted about a 33-10 victory. It depends, really, because if Johnny does play, it adds that element of uncertainty, especially in a short week when it's hard to prepare for a team anyway. So it might be closer than that. But I think if we can get on a roll against that you know, banged-up secondary, and I always feel like the road teams have a tough time of it, because physically for the big guys, it's always tough. So we'll see how much pressure they can get on Dalton. But if they don't get pressure on Dalton early, we'll get away from them, and our defense will be able to get after whoever is at quarterback. So I think, yeah, 33-10, I'll stick with that.
Yeah, and as you say, a game like this against a team you think you should win could be that kind of game that sneaks up on you, right? The trap game, as they like to say. But interesting. Rob, if you had to say final score here, what are you seeing?
Well, as much as I'd like to put it through rose-colored glasses, I really think this is I'm pretty close to what he had, about at 31-17. I think we could maybe punch in a couple scores late to make it closer than it actually is. I'm pretty down on this team. I had higher hopes for what we would be able to do, especially, like I said, on the defensive front. I don't think we're going to get much pressure on Dalton. And when you don't get pressure on any quarterback in the NFL, but we've really seen with Dalton this year, he can really pick you apart. So I think it could get ugly early. I'm hoping that we can keep it close and then maybe get out at the end, but I really see it as more like a 31-17 game for the Bengals.
All right. Hey. You got Brian, the Packers superfan here. I'm joined today by Jimmy, the Carolina Panthers superfan. How's it going, Jimmy?
Hey, what's going on? How's everybody doing?
It's been a rough week up in Green Bay. I imagine you feel a little bit differently down in Carolina.
Hey, it's unbelievable. I can't believe it.
If somebody would have told you that they would have gone 7-0 at the start of the year, would you have believed them?
No way. Not a chance in this world, that's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, they look pretty good. But we're here to talk about the Panthers versus the Packers, so why don't we get into that? Can you tell me a little bit about how you think the Panthers' offense will match up against the Packers' defense?
I think Carolina will be, I don't think it's a great matchup, but not a terrible matchup, but I really don't think Carolina, it matters what kind of defense they're playing against, because they're going to run the same formula no matter who they're playing against. And it's really been a one-man show for Carolina with Cam Newton, and I believe I read a statistic today that Cam Newton accounted for about 1,500 yards of the 2,220 entire offensive yards that Carolina has put up. So he's
wow.
I think that's exactly why he's here. It is. The Panthers have 2,444 yards and 19 touchdowns. Cam is directly responsible for 1,809 yards and 15 touchdowns. And I completely agree. That's why Cam's in the MVP conversation, despite not having the crazy fantasy numbers like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. But it's a one-man show. Carolina will hand the ball to Jonathan Stewart as needed, and mix in Mike Tolbert here and there. But it just seems like when we play Green Bay, we've played in the last couple of years, they always find a way to eliminate our best weapon. I definitely think they'll neutralize Cam. And I think it's going to be a tough matchup offensively, especially coming off a long, tiresome game against Indianapolis this last Monday. But I think Carolina will be somewhat successful running the ball, but eventually it'll come down to Cam throwing the ball. He just has no one to throw the ball to.
Right, yeah. That's really I hadn't thought about Cam as an MVP candidate, but I really can't think of somebody who's more deserving now that you mention it, because you just said it. He accounts for so much of that offense, and I'll be honest, I'm nervous a little bit about how we match up against Cam specifically. In the past, we played him fairly well, but we've had some struggles against the running quarterbacks, and I think Cam is as good as it gets in that area. Now, Matthews did practice today, so it's looking like he's going to play, which is obviously a very good thing when it comes to containing Cam Newton, because he's going to be able to kind of man the middle of the field and get the defense lined up, and, you know, worst comes to worst, he can make the tackle on Cam. And then the other part of the offense that's a little scary is Greg Olsen. On the Packers side, I don't know that we have somebody that matches up very well with him. I suppose you want to put one of our safeties on him, either Ha-Ha Clinton Dix or Morgan Burnett. Maybe we see some Micah Hyde on him. But if we can find a way to slow down Cam and slow down Greg Olsen, I think we're going to be in good shape. I'm not going to hold my breath on shutting down the running attack of Carolina. I think they're first in the league there, and I think probably a lot of that's from Cam. Running backs are doing their fair share there too, and we made Denver was previously a pretty terrible running offense. We made them look pretty good last week. So as far as the matchups go, I think on defense, it's not a great matchup for us either. But got faith in our guys. Why don't we flip the script? Let me talk a little bit about the Packers offense lining up against the Carolina Panthers defense. Personally, you know, the passing attack is kind of where it starts and stops in Green Bay, and we didn't look very good last week. And I think we're going to have some tough sledding again this week. I don't expect Aaron Rodgers to throw for 77 yards again, but I don't think it's going to be for 300 either. That secondary looks just way too good. At all three levels of the defense, he looked really good, actually, with, you know, Kiki playing out of his mind, as usual, and then that defensive line emerging. Running the ball, I think we try to get Lacy going here a little bit. He looked healthy last week. I think the game flow kind of forced us to deviate from the rushing attack there. So maybe we can get it back on track this week. I don't know. What do you think about how the Panthers match up against the Packers?
I think it'll be a very interesting matchup. Kind of similarly how I think we matched up against Philadelphia 2 weeks ago, because I think Indianapolis displayed granted it was in the fourth quarter and Carolina was playing a prevent style defense and when they blew the lead against Indianapolis, but Indy ran a very up-tempo, no huddle, get the ball out kind of quick kind of offense. And at that point in the game, it wore out the pass rush, the coverage. So I think Green Bay, if I'm them, I'm coming out right away, slinging it, getting the ball out as soon as quick possible. But like I said, it kind of reminds me of when Carolina played Philly, because that's Philly style. And with Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis, they're everywhere tackling people, no matter how quick you get it out. So I think it's a very interesting matchup there. Early in the game against Indianapolis, Frank Gore did show some signs of success running straight up the gut against our defense, and with a big back like Lacy, I could see you guys trying to see how successful you guys are there early on, see if you're getting any love in the middle. But it's Josh Norman is an unsung hero. He's starting to get some recognition after the Monday night game, but he's been playing out of his mind. I imagine we'll put him on Randall Cobb most of the day and eliminate him. It's amazing that can I actually say we have a corner that can eliminate a receiver from the game. But it's a very interesting matchup. You guys' offensive line has been better, I want to say, than years past. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. But so I think that'll be interesting trying to keep Aaron Rodgers upright. But I think if you guys come out throwing it immediately, up tempo, trying to wear our defense, kind of like how Indy did at the end of the game last week. Kuechly, Thomas Davis, they're all there. We lost Marvin Addison 2 weeks ago. It'll be interesting to see if he's kind of week to week, and if he can come back, that definitely gives a little more depth on that line than what we had against Indy. But it's definitely a very intriguing matchup philosophically wise, because you got a great quarterback versus a defense that just goes and make tackles. It's been very impressive watching Carolina defense, because not many big names, but they're getting the job done, and I really think the Green Bay offenses are real. First true test against an elite offense so far on our schedule.
Well, I'm glad you think so, because I do not feel like we've been very elite for the past month or so. It's been really tough sledding on the offensive side. I've talked a lot about it in the discussions with other super fans, but our receivers have really struggled to get open. Part of that is our scheme, and you know, we run a lot of spread offense, which is kind of one-on-one matchups. There's not a whole lot of route concepts that happen in our offense. And if the one-on-one match, if you lose your one-on-one matchup, and our guys have been, it's hard for Aaron to throw the ball, which is kind of what we've seen for the last month or so. You're right. Josh Norman has been playing out of his mind. He looks like the next best corner in the league, as far as I can tell. But, yeah, he looks great. I'll be really curious to see if there are any adjustments this week. We looked really, really bad on both sides of the ball last week. And us coming out of the bye the week before, you would have thought that would have been the opportune time to do some self-scouting, figure out how to make ourselves better, and it really just didn't translate on the field. So I think we need to go back to the drawing board, figure out how to correct that offense, and see what we can do to challenge Carolina for NFC supremacy. What do you think for the final score? You got a prediction?
Yeah, I think Green Bay does win the game, unfortunately. It just seems like a back-to-back loss for Green Bay never happens, and I definitely think Carolina is worn out after this last three-game stretch when they went to Seattle, hosted Philly, hosted Indy, and now we host Green Bay. I just think that this part of the schedule is starting to take a toll on the team. So I think you guys win by at least a touchdown. I think a key factor is tempo and control of the clock of Carolina's offense. If they can stay on the offensive side of the ball for a little bit and sustain some drives, and they got to finish with touchdowns. They cannot settle for field goals against Green Bay, that is for sure. Then I think we have a chance. And then it seems, I forgot to bring up earlier, it just seems like every time Julius Peppers comes back to Carolina, he wreaks havoc.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't stand the guy because he left us, but I love him at the same time. And when he was in Chicago, I think he had a pick six, a deflection pick six on his first play when we had Jimmy Clausen in the game. It was just, it seems like anytime he comes back, he's shooting hoops as soon as he sacks our guy. And so I expect him to have a big game, especially coming towards the end of his career. It could be his last time in Carolina.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I hadn't even thought about that, actually. That's Bears watching, anyway. From the Green Bay side, I think this is probably the closest thing to a must-win game there is in November, because a loss to Carolina means we're effectively three games out from the number one seed, which is the goal for us this year, or most years. I do think that when teams are evenly matched, that the team who needs to win more often gets it done. So for that reason, and pretty much that reason alone, I don't have a whole lot to brag about after the way we looked last week. But I do think that the Packers win on maybe a game-winning field goal. Low-scoring game, I'll say 23-20.
A lot of people, I mean, I think it's not being covered as much as it is. This is a pivotal game for what could be home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And I know Carolina, everyone knows going to Green Bay in the playoffs is nearly impossible to win. So it's a very important game for Carolina. And I'll say to this day that the game when we went to Seattle and won changed this team. It boosted so much confidence that years before, this is the type of game we'd definitely go out and lose. So I definitely think this is a game that Carolina will play competitively, and I just think we're going to be outmatched a little bit on the offensive side of the board. Now, I'm looking at the forecast in Charlotte. It looks like 90% chance of rain on Saturday and 50% chance on Sunday. So I don't think it'll be as bad as it was on Monday night in the rainstorm there, but it could be a wet game. But if it's a wet game, I think that's beneficial for Carolina.
All right. I can't wait to find out. We'll all find out on Sunday. Thanks, Jimmy.
All right, Brian. Thank you.
Good afternoon, podcast world. I'm Mike Lovelace representing the Denver Broncos, and I'm here with Dan representing the Indianapolis Colts. Here to talk to you about the battle coming up, Denver versus Indianapolis, played in Indianapolis this coming Sunday afternoon. Dan, I'm going to start with you. What do you think? How's Peyton Manning going to do going up against that Indianapolis defense?
Well, we saw last playoffs where Peyton struggled a little bit when the Colts got physical with his receivers and forced him to throw long and outside. So I'm expecting a similar game plan there where the defensive backs get into Thomas and Sanders and really forced Peyton to make those more difficult throws. We saw last week Denver had a lot of in cutting routes. Hopefully the Colts got some tape on that, paid attention, and try to make Peyton work the outside. It looked like the Broncos got their running game going too, which it seems like the Colts have been decent against that this year, but it just lately it doesn't have the same feel that it had early on in the season. So I don't really know what's going on too much there. But it looks like Peyton has a chance, too, to break the all-time passing yards in the house that Peyton built, I'll call it. So what do you think? Think he'll get it?
So I tell you what, that 283, I think it is, if I did my math correctly, is 283 yards away from breaking the record. Very attainable based on what we saw last week, based on what we saw a couple weeks before. I would not have said that. I think that bye week paid off for the Denver Broncos. Peyton's looking good, and really, you hit it. It's, It's behind Ronnie Hillman and C.J. Anderson. It seemed like they found their running game this past week. That offensive line was giving them the holes that zone blocking scheme is supposed to provide, and they looked real good going against the Packers, which were supposed to be a very good defense. With what I saw, definitely starts up front with that O-line and what Hillman and Anderson are able to do, and that allows Peyton to do a little bit of that play action. Gets a couple bootlegs in per game. It's a little scary every time I see him running one of those, but it seems to work out every single time now. A little surprised that it's working out. It's a lot of completions off of that boot.
It's a soft J. It's actually yogging that he does.
A little bit of yogging. Yogging to the outside. It's worked, though. I hope to stick with it. It's working out. I do got to bring up, we got Vernon Davis. We were talking about this a little bit ago. I don't think we're going to see too much of Vernon Davis yet. It'll be interesting to see how they're able to incorporate him into the offense. My suspicion is that it's going to be too early to bring him into the game and see a significant amount of playing time. From everything that I've heard from the players talking, it sounds like the Kubiak-Manning offense takes a little bit of time to learn. I don't see Vernon Davis learning more than a couple plays, maybe a couple he'll have a couple things drawn up just for him potentially, but probably not too much time on the field. All right, I'm going to move on. Let's talk about the Indianapolis offense against that stout Denver defense. Andrew Luck, what's going on with him?
Well, it depends on which reports you believe, really. He had some injuries that he's dealing with. Now the reports are saying he's fully healthy. So he's just had some poor decision-making that's been going on. And I don't know why he's forcing a lot of throws and just making late reads, sticking on his first man and his on his route tree, not going off of that very often. But as everyone knows, they fired their offensive coordinator this week and brought in a new guy. So the hope there is that they'll be able to game plan a little bit better, use the tight ends a little more often. Chud has a history with tight ends. He coached some tight ends down at the U in Miami and then came into the NFL and had some success with that. He's also responsible for, I think it was Josh Gordon, the big years in Cleveland. So a lot of tight end work, a lot of throws designed for your number one option, which Luck's been forcing it to T.Y., but I don't know that T.Y.'s really been open, whether that's play design or T.Y.'s fault on that. I'm not sure yet, but hopefully they'll get some good play design to get T.Y. the ball and let him do his thing. And then hopefully the last hope is that he'll stick to the running game. The running game will be huge, as Peyton found out against Green Bay. If you can get a running game going, that makes the passing game so much more open and so much easier to navigate. But it doesn't sound like Luck will have too much time to do that. With that Broncos defense you guys are bringing, and Tlaib's had his way with T.Y. in the past, and that's what T.Y. plays, I guess. He had an MRI on his foot this week. He has a sprained foot that has put him at day-to-day, but I imagine he'll play. He's played through more pain, I think, with his knee earlier this year than the pain he's going through with his foot. So it'll be a tough matchup for Indy, especially with that great defense you guys are bringing to Indy. What do you expect to see out of that D?
Yeah, like you said, it's a great defense, and I think after this past week at Green Bay, people around the country are starting to recognize that. They were kind of flying under the radar a little bit. The Denver no-fly zone, as the defensive secondary has been nicknamed. It's about time they're getting the recognition that they deserve all season. I think a lot of people here in Denver expected to see a defense like everyone's seeing right now. You did end up agreeing with the offensive change in the middle of the season on a short week. It'll be interesting to see what Indianapolis is doing. I'd be shocked implementing new offense on short week. I can't imagine what a offensive coordinator is going to be doing coming in when he did. I kind of have no idea what to expect that. I kind of expect more scene of Indianapolis. That's just to see them playing prime time, obviously, some weather conditions that they were battling. But it was an offensive line that didn't look like they could protect for Luck, didn't give him much time at all. I like this. I like our front seven going against that O-line. And then our defensive backs, I tell you what, you're going to see Chris Harris Jr. on T.Y. Hilton probably the entire game. And with Aqib Talib Saban, Bradley Roby, I don't see any guys getting open on your guys'. I don't see any of your receivers getting open. It's going to be a little bit – I don't know if we're ever going to be able to have another game like we did against Green Bay where we were holding Aaron Rodgers to not many yards at all. I don't remember what the final count was, but well less than 100.
There's 50 net yards.
50 net yards. That's I think that's taken away some from the sacks. I think he had 70-something right. throwing, but lost some from some of those sacks. But it's pretty impressive what they did against Aaron Rodgers. There's a lot about Aaron Rodgers that Andrew Luck reminds me of, in particular the mobility and the way that they can manipulate the pockets. I don't think Luck's really been doing it this year as much as he has in the past. But the one thing that the Broncos did against the Packers is they didn't necessarily just come with the speed rush. They stayed in their lanes, and they did not give Rodgers anywhere to escape. I see a little bit more of that coming up with Andrew Luck to just kind of make sure that he stays in the pocket but collapse that pocket so he has nowhere to move and he still feels that pressure.
Yeah, that's a big concern. Luck hasn't looked to run as much this year, probably because of his injuries, but he still likes to move, and if he sits in that pocket too long, he leaves that ball exposed a little bit more than you'd like to see. Going back to the Denver defense just real quick, Pagano compared this Broncos defense to the 85 Bears and the 2000 Ravens, and Pagano knows a thing or two about defense, or at least that's what I've been told. So he knows his stuff, and the Colts definitely have their hands full trying to get up and down the field. Now, if you tell me that Luck's only going to throw for 77 yards, I don't know that I'd believe you, but apparently that's what Aaron Rodgers did last week. So be a pretty tough matchup, that's for sure.
Now, I've been talking up this Denver defense, but if you told me Rodgers would have thrown for 77 yards, I would say you're a fool of it. It was incredibly impressive, like beyond impressive, what the defensive backs in particular were able to do to that wide receiver core. Rodgers just had nowhere to go with the ball all day long.
Yeah, and it's not very often you see Aaron Rodgers just hold the ball and pat the ball and not get rid of it.
All right. So what do you think? What's your final prediction for this Sunday's game?
I'm going to go Denver 27, Indianapolis 19.
I got to say, I was going to be right there with you. I was just a little bit different at Denver 31 to Indianapolis 14, looking for that domination once again. All right, Dan, been great talking to you. You have a good day.
Thanks, Mike. You too. See ya.
All right, so that was the Browns, Bengals, Packers, Panthers, Broncos, and Colts. Ron, I'll start with you. What do you think of the Thursday night game? Who do you got?
Oh, Cincinnati for sure. I think Cincinnati's for real, but even if they weren't for real, I don't anticipate Cleveland being much of a challenge for them, especially at Cincinnati. So I would definitely have Cincinnati in that one.
Davey, who do you got in this one?
Yeah, you'd have to be out of your mind not to stick with Cincy on this. I'm starting to come around, starting to believe that Cincinnati is actually legitimate and they're going to be sticking around and maybe give your Pats an actual run for their money if anybody's going to. I kind of still doubt that, but we'll see.
Well, even if they did give them a run for their money, it wouldn't happen until the playoffs.
Well, that's what I mean, but, you know. we're hoping somebody can, but.
In our Pigskin Pick'em group, I had a good week. It was 11. That was above average. However, it was not good enough as sick go. Man, our Sunday night host still continuing to kill it on his picks. He had 12 last week, so he continues to stay on top with 82. Greg, our home team guy, always going with the home team, remains in second place with 79. I, too, am going with the Bengals. Now, here's the thing, folks. Bengals are favored by 10.5. Last week, I had 11 right going straight up. But in my point spread pool, I went 12 and 14. Yes, I had a very good week in picks last week. And that was by going against the Number Fire pick. Number Fire has the likelihood of the Bengals covering this week at a lowly 49.4%. but that is still better than 48.5% of Cleveland plus 11. So I'm going to take Cincinnati to cover. And since it's only 10.5 in my pool, I'm definitely taking Cincinnati to cover. Okay, that was a lot of talking.
Did you get some sort of lock or anything in this? Because, you know, I feel like this would be, if we get some sort of lock of the week of some sort, this is my lock.
Yeah, this is a good lock.
I'm most confident.
I am definitely taking the Bengals here as my lock. I should mention that as well. Although I've already lost two locks this year. I've been on a streak,
though. Yeah, that's the move, though. You lock a million people always.
No. I don't. I lock a different team each week, and I am on a streak of four right. The last time I got one wrong was week four and the stupid Cardinals. And week two, the stupid Ravens showed who they really were this year, and I didn't want to believe it. So I am.
Yeah, they knocked me out of my eliminator pool. So,
Ron, were you jumping in there?
No, I was not.
Oh, okay. The Bengals. Bengals are my lock of the week. Thank you for reminding me of that. We also heard the Packers and the Panthers. By the way, these next two super battles, I mean, Packers-Panthers, I'm curious as to why that game never got didn't get flexed, but then I was reminded that there's no way the NFL is going to flex out in a Cowboys game for a Panthers game, and certainly not a Panthers-Packers game. The TV audiences just aren't there, despite the fact that it is arguably the game of the week. I don't know which way to go here. The Panthers, the undefeated team, Packers previously undefeated, losing to the Broncos. This one could go either way for me, Ron.
I'm going to take Carolina at home. I think that Green Bay's offense, even though they were winning, you know, up until they played Denver, their offense has just been off for some reason. That's supposed to be what's going to carry them. I'm kind of concerned about that offense. They're playing Carolina, which is a pretty good defense. I really like Cam a lot. I kind of have him in my top four quarterbacks, four or five guys in this league that could actually put a team on their back and carry you to victories. I don't really think there's more than four or five guys. I have Cam as one of them. I have Rodgers as one of them as well, but there's something not right with that offense right now, so I'm going to go Carolina.
What do you got, Davey?
I'm going the other way. I'm going to think that Green Bay is going to bounce back. I think that they got a little embarrassed last week against Denver. I think Rodgers can bounce back from this. I think that you know, Carolina barely beat a pretty junky Indianapolis team, and I think that Rodgers can go in there and have a good bounce-back game, and maybe they sneak out with a win. Maybe it's close, but I think they're going to do a good job.
The Panthers' defense is good, but it's not as good as the Denver Broncos. Number Fire really likes Carolina plus 2.5 at 61.7%. However, I'd like to point out that Riverboat Rivera is 0-2 lifetime against the Packers. I'm going with the Packers here to win one on the road. They are minus 2.5. That's kind of close to an upset special, but I'm going to save that. The Broncos and the Colts, another game. Well, before the Colts ended up really stinking the bed here in the first half of the season, could have been a game of the week. Broncos still undefeated, and I think the Broncos will remain undefeated by the end of this game. Davey, what do you say?
Yeah, this is the week we figure out if last week was fake or not. Did the Broncos figure out their offense? I like to think they did, but I'm not sure. But I definitely think they at least stay undefeated. So I'm picking them.
Ron?
Yeah, I'm going to take Denver. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I think Denver's going to pull it out. There's just definitely things are not right this year in Indianapolis, and as a Dolphins fan, I know what craziness between a GM, an owner, a coach, a quarterback, what all that kind of ensues, and that's really a lot of what's going on with Indianapolis right now. They just have no cohesiveness, so Denver's playing well. I'll go with Denver.
Here's a game that's close to your heart, Ron. It's the Dolphins at the Bills. Both teams here sort of thought they were going to be in contention for the AFC East. Doesn't look like that's going to be the case now. But Dan Campbell definitely has the Dolphins turned around. He just wasn't able to turn it around all the way against my New England Patriots.
Yeah, no surprise there, as I predicted.
So what do you got in this one? Dolphins and the Bills.
I am guaranteeing that the Dolphins win this game and will be going on a three-game winning streak to include winning at Philadelphia, and then when Romo in his homecoming back from the injury will also be winning that game as well. The Dolphins are going to win the next three in a row, go on a little bit of a streak here. But for sure, they're going to start by beating Buffalo.
Davey?
What do we get for your, what do we get for the guarantee, out of curiosity? Like, if they don't win, do I get some sort of refund for my time watching the game? Like, what's the guarantee worth? I'm curious.
I don't know. It's just it's the Vogue thing to do, to guarantee wins. So, okay. So I'm just, I've never actually done it before, worth. But it's my first time. Hopefully it won't be my last.
You know, Ryan, our Jaguars superfan, laid the Joe Namath guarantee out, I think it was week two, and it came
against
through for
the
him.
Dolphins, no doubt, and he was correct.
Yeah, so...
nice, okay.
So maybe,
that's just a little good karma.
Maybe, could be.
Okay.
What do you think,
Davey?
That's
a bold guarantee coming from a Jags fan. Okay, well, I'm kind of going the other way here. They Bills have Tyrod Taylor back, right? I think they do.
Yes.
Ooh.
So I'm gonna go with the Bills, thinking that he might give him a spark and you know, do something crazy to pull out a win. I don't really think the Bills are that good, but neither are the Dolphins, so I'm gonna go with the Bills.
The Bills might get Davey back. That's pretty funny. Might get Tyrod Taylor back. They might be getting Sammy Watkins back as well. That doesn't excuse the fact that they still have Rex Ryan as their head coach. Now, Number Fire has the Bills at -3, a 53.9% likelihood. I personally like what Dan Campbell has brought to the Dolphins. I think Rex Ryan gets his team once again over-fired up, and Dan Campbell and the Dolphins sneak one out here. The weather, by the way, which around this time of year is supposed to be beneficial for Buffalo and would be detrimental to a team like Miami, 50 degrees and sunny. So the Dolphins luck out here weather-wise coming up to Buffalo. I'm going with Miami in this one, sticking with my pattern of going against the Number Fire. The next game here on tap, the Titans at the Saints. I think if we needed another lock of the week, this could be it. I think the Saints have turned the corner. I sense a blowout in the dome. Saints-Titans, what do you think, Ron?
I think it'll be a little bit closer. I don't know about as much of a blowout, especially, I mean, to play two games in a row, like this, you know, the Saints just scored 52 points to come back and play, you know, another huge offensive game. They actually have not been that great in the dome, which is weird because it used to be the total opposite. So I feel like the Saints will win for sure. I just don't know that it's going to be a blowout. Tennessee has been able to play some games close this year, more so than others. And then other teams, they just get blown away. You just really never know what you're going to get. I think it'll be a little bit closer, though. I take the Saints.
Davey?
Yeah, I'm with you, Pat. I don't know that they've turned the corner completely, but, boy, they really should handle Tennessee. I mean, they've turned the corner enough to take care of that team, so I'm with the Saints.
From the useless stats department, the Titans actually have won 4 of their past 5 against the Saints. Of course, the last time they played the Saints was in 2011, and the Saints won that one. So that's why we call it the useless stat department. I'm still sticking with the Saints blowing out the Titans. It's 2015. The Raiders, who have opened up some eyes and are in a nice position in terms of wild cards for the AFC playoffs, go on the road to Pittsburgh. It's a West Coast team, and we're talking about the Raiders, going East Coast, 1 o'clock kickoff. None of that spells anything good for the Raiders. I'm going to take the Steelers in this one. Davey?
I really want to see the Raiders win, but I don't think it's going to happen for all the reasons you just named. I do think the only chance they have is that the Steelers just lost Bell, So maybe they can capitalize on a team that's, you know, a little bad. But I don't think that's going to happen, so I'm picking the Steelers.
Ron?
Yeah, I like the Steelers. I think this is a situation where you've got a fairly inexperienced quarterback that's going into Pittsburgh to try and compete against a Super Bowl-winning champ. I don't think him or that team is ready for that yet. I think Big Ben will definitely get the win and cover the 4.5 that they're favored by as well.
All that said, though, this is a pretty interesting game, right? Like, if the Raiders pull it out, this would be their, you know, big eye-opening party that they're a legit team.
Oh, for sure. Oh, no doubt. If Oakland pulls this out at Pittsburgh, Carr at, you know, against Ben and pulls out this win, and considering how much it means to Pittsburgh as well, I'd say for sure they're a legitimate team.
Yeah, people have to take them seriously if they win this game. Because right now,
oh, for
they
sure.
kind of think of them as like the cute team that's trying hard.
The little engine that could.
Right.
I think that's pretty legit. By the way, another place where weather could be a factor at this time of year won't be. So the Raiders luck out on that spot there. 55 degrees and sunny, the current weather prediction for Pittsburgh on Sunday. Next game up is the Rams and the Vikings. Here's two teams where we're talking about the little engine that could. And, I mean, I haven't believed in the Vikings. I still don't want to believe in the Vikings. And Christopher Harris, you're still on call. I will reach out to you soon, even though our two teams are now tied in terms of record. My boyfriend's the Atlanta Falcons versus your boyfriend's the Minnesota Vikings. The Rams, that up and down team, the only reason why I'm taking the Vikings here is because of the home team. If this game was in St. Louis, I'd probably take St. Louis. That's sort of how I see these two teams. They're pretty equal. Ron?
I got Minnesota the whole way here. I was on record before the season started saying I really liked Minnesota, liked what they were doing. And now I really like this receiver that you guys have, Diggs. I think he's just added something that nobody saw coming, except, unless you were maybe a hardcore Minnesota fan. I would take Minnesota either way, whether it was home or away. But for a two-point spread, I'd definitely take Minnesota and take them to cover.
Davey, go for it.
I think it's definitely a game that's going to give us more trouble than some people think. And the reason is St. Louis has an amazing defensive line, and we have a offensive line that leaves much to be desired. There's a couple huge losses with Lodeholt and our center Sullivan that are gone. So whenever we get pressured up the middle like that, I mean, this isn't really, you know, big news, but pretty much any quarterback's terrible when they get pressured up the middle. But you know, Teddy just has to check down, and we don't get much in the running game going with that. So I think it could give us a lot of trouble. I kind of agree with you, Pod, that we're pretty evenly matched in that front when it comes down to that. I do think that since it's at home, we'll handle them and find a way to pull one out. But I'm more worried about it than maybe Ron seems to be. I'm going to stick with the Vikings and pick us, but I'm not super confident.
From the useless stats department, Jeff Fisher, 1-6 all time versus the Vikings. Now, I don't know how many times that is with the Rams and with the Titans. I don't know what the split is there, but that's sort of an interesting note. The last time these two teams play was in 2014. Matt Cassel was the quarterback in that game, and the Vikings dominated the Rams 34-6. Another interesting stat, you brought up the running game for the Vikings. Adrian Peterson has rushed for 350 yards and 3 touchdowns in 3 meetings versus the Rams. So I do like history. History is on your side there, Davey, in terms of this particular matchup.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see Gurley and Peterson go on drive for drive here this weekend and seeing the old Adrian Peterson versus the new Adrian Peterson, right?
I like the comparison. I think it's fitting.
Yeah, passing the torch.
Next game up is the Washington Redskins at my New England Patriots, and another one where if we had a lock of the week, you could lock in the New England Patriots here. I've already used the Pats earlier this season. The line, though, is 13.5, and actually Number Fire has it at 14. Likelihood of New England minus 14 only 37%. Normally, I would say double-digit spread, and especially double-digit spreads in favor of the Patriots, go with the other team. And Washington is coming off of a bye. However, New England played on Thursday night, which means they had sort of a half bye week as well. You don't want to give Bill Belichick that much time to prepare for your team. I'm going with the New England Patriots big over the Washington Redskins. Ron.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's the biggest spread of the week. 14 is what I'm seeing, and I say they cover it easily. And I got to ask you a question, and I don't pay as close attention as you do. How many games has New England played at home in a row? Doesn't it feel like this is the third time in a row they played at home, or am I wrong on that?
This is, in fact, the third time in a row. And this
seems
is,
like every week I'm seeing them play at home, at home, at home. So another one at home. They haven't had to travel anywhere. They're going to destroy
Washington. Ron, are you accusing them of cheating the schedule? I think you're accusing them of cheating the schedule.
Hey, I will say this. We are in week 9. Would you like to know how many games the Dolphins have played at home in Miami through week 9? They have played 2. Through week 9, we have played 2 games at home in Miami, and next week we still play on the road again. We will not play our third at-home game until week 11.
You get to finish
11.
Up. That's not so bad. You get to finish
just
up with
saying.
One of them, then.
I'm just saying. It's schedule gate. It is schedule gate. I'm calling
oh,
you now.
Oh, boy. Breaking news. Pop.
How dare you? First of all, I will not allow that sort of innuendo on this podcast. It will just not happen. The Patriots' end of the year schedule is mostly on the road. I believe 3 of their last 4 games are on the road to finish out the season. It will ultimately even out. It's 8 games at home, 8 games on the road, unless you have one of those stupid London games. And thank goodness those are done for this year. But in any case, yeah, I think 14 points, it's one of those scary numbers you usually want to try to avoid. But I'm telling you, give the points. Take the Patriots, give the points. Davey.
I mean, the Patriots are going to win like 40-10. This game is a disaster.
Sure.
By the way, if you want some history here, the last time these two teams played was in 2011. It was Patriots 34, Redskins 27. Brady threw for 357 yards, 3 touchdowns, Gronk catching 2 of them. And then before that was in 2007, Patriots 52, Redskins 7. I like that one. That sounds like a good one. Mike Vrabel had 3 sacks and 3 forced fumbles in that game.
That long ago? Holy cow.
Yeah. It's crazy how quickly time flies.
Wow. Yeah, seriously.
The Jaguars, the aforementioned Jaguars, are visiting the New York Jets. For some reason, the Jets are favored by 6.5 points. To me, that number seems extremely high. I'm going to let you guys discuss it first, and then I'll make my pick. Davey, discuss.
I don't think the Jets are as good as we thought they were opening the season. Everybody was really high on their defense. I think after they played the last 2 weeks, we learned that they're good on D, but they're not the Broncos. And the Jags are actually they got a couple good receivers. You know, they're playing decent on offense. I think they could challenge him pretty well. I could see the Jags winning this game, and I think I'd like to pick them as one. They're not favored, right? I didn't hear what you said.
The Jaguars are not. When the line opened, it was 6.5. It is now a pick'em line. By the way, Ryan Fitzpatrick is scheduled to start for the New York Jets this week.
Well, I'm going with the Jags. I think I could see those receivers breaking loose for a couple and pulling one out. For some reason, I just don't think the Jets are as good on D as we thought they were at the beginning of the year. They've gotten exposed a bit, so I'm going with the Jags.
Ron, what do you think? The Jets are in your division. You see a lot of the Jets. What do you got?
I think the Jets will sneak out a win. Jacksonville they seem to be one of those teams that's like a step behind Oakland. They're competing, but they're unlike Oakland, they're not getting the wins. I don't think this will be any different in New York. I think New York needs this win badly now because they've gone on a bit of a losing streak here of late. So I think the Jets are going to pull it out. I don't think it's going to be a beautiful game either. I think it'll be kind of ugly, kind of mucked up, and the Jets will get a victory, though.
History from the useless stats department. Jaguars are 6-4 in the series versus the Jets. They've won 3 of the past 5. Neither coach has faced the other team. Of course, that's because we're talking about Gus Bradley and Todd Bowles, who are fairly new coaches. I said I was out on the Jaguars. I was out on believing in the Jaguars. And, of course, they went and won. Now, if I say I'm in on the Jaguars, of course, they're going to go out and lose. But that's sort of why I hate the Jaguars and why I'm going to say I'm in back in on the Jaguars. I think the Jaguars can beat the Jets. Ryan Fitzpatrick is banged up. Granted, it is his non-throwing hand. I still don't quite understand, you know, the significance of having a sprained thumb on the non-throwing hand, how that's really going to affect anything. I mean, seriously, guys, let's talk about this for a quick second. It's a sprained thumb on the non-throwing hand. How does that affect the quarterback? Even if it is, you know, painful to get the snap of the football from the center. Can anyone give me any?
That's like it. Thumbs up to his receivers. I don't know.
No, that's it. It's just that. It's got to be that. Just the fact of just getting the ball from under center, and maybe not even in a shotgun or a pistol, but right under center. And maybe it just affects. Maybe they take some tries, take a lot of practices, snaps from center, and see that it affects it. It may cause a turnover or two more that you wouldn't have had, and that can be the difference in a game that could be close. That might be why, but I tell you what, if Geno Smith is playing, give me Jacksonville because that guy sucks.
Listen,
yeah, he's the worst.
The greatest quarterback of all time for the New England Patriots, Drew Bledsoe, had a broken tip of his middle finger, which is the last finger to force, you know, to apply force onto a football in the throwing motion. And he played just fine. So, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I'm glad you're playing. I'm glad you're sucking it up because if you didn't, I'd have to talk a lot about the fact that you have a bad thumb on your non-throwing hand. To me, it seemed ludicrous what they were trying to tell us during that game.
Are you saying he's in the going to go into the Jay Cutler club if he doesn't actually play?
It'd be pretty darn close. Now, Geno Smith, I'm going to give him all the credit in the world because I saw the hit. I guarantee it was – he got a huge shot running down the field, and I forget who laid the lumber on him during the course of the game. And he stayed in, and he seemed to be okay. But then, you know, it came out that he's got, you know, a hurt ab or whatever he's dealing with. I was like, oh, that shot definitely took a lot more out of him than they were letting on. But Geno Smith, tough guy, but I definitely wouldn't want him playing quarterback this week if he's feeling that much pain. We're on to the 4 o'clock games now, and my boyfriends, the Falcons, who've let me down once again, are now on the road against the San Francisco 49ers. Colin Kaepernick has been benched. The real American, Blaine Gabbert, takes over. Listen, I knew the 49ers were a dumpster fire at the beginning of the year. I don't like the Falcons going on the road, but I'm not going to pick the 49ers to get out of the dumpster fire just because Blaine Gabbert's now the quarterback. I like the Falcons in this one. Ron?
Yeah, I'm not a Falcons believer like you are, although I think you might be losing a little bit of faith, but you took the words out of my mouth, San Francisco. Until they come up with a better phrase, dumpster fire is just it. We're just going to be the most overused phrase for every bad team there is. Yeah, San Francisco is just a mess. They're not beating Atlanta. Atlanta will win.
Davey?
Yeah, it's Atlanta. I'd be shocked if there's a lot of locks of the week this week that you could pick, huh?
You got a lot of choices, that's for sure.
There's kind of no chance that San Francisco pulls this one out. I'd be shocked.
The New York Giants are at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Bucs, I think, a little bit of a surprise at 3-4. I don't know. Maybe that's a stretch. But I really don't see the Bucs as being a real challenger here, a real threat to the New York Giants. And I'm going to take the Giants on the road. Davey?
I could see them making it closer than people think, but I mean, Eli obviously came to life last week and won me quite a fantasy matchup. So yeah, I'm sticking with the Giants.
Ron?
I like the Giants for sure. I think that they're pushing for that division, and Nobody really saw it coming from them, not me for sure. I mean, Tampa's interesting because I really, really, really like Jameis Winston. I just think he's going to be awesome. He's just so aggressive and so just a fearless when he plays, and I love that, but he's not there yet, so I'll take the Giants.
In the Let's Pick Kings number fire week, which is what I'm doing pretty much all this week, Tampa Bay plus 2.5, a 59.4% likelihood. I'm going to feel pretty confident about that Giants pick. Sunday night, ladies and gentlemen, we have the Eagles at the Cowboys. Cowboys are 2.5-point underdogs at home. Usually I say go with the home dog, but we're still talking about Matt Castle. Tony Romo apparently was throwing at practice, though, so maybe Romo will try and make a quicker than he probably should return to the football field. I just don't think it's going to happen in this game, and I think the Eagles can and should beat the Dallas Cowboys. Ron?
I want Dallas to win so bad, but I don't think it's going to happen. I don't know what it is about Philly. I just don't like Chip Kelly. I do not like Chip Kelly. I never have. I go on continuous rants about that guy. But unfortunately, I think Philly's going to win. I just don't think Dallas, I'll be honest with you, I don't think Romo is Tom Brady, and pretty much that's what it's like trying to show right now. They're 2-0 with Romo, then they can't win a game without him. He's not that good. I'm going to start to think that Dallas just isn't that good. And when Romo comes back, I think they'll just kind of be, you know, here or there. They're not going to have a really good season. I'll take Philly.
Davey?
No, everybody always seems to never want to give Romo credit, but when he goes down, it seems like he's proving that he's pretty valuable to that team. Anyway, I do think that Philly's going to win, and I really do want Dallas to win. I think they've got a chance now that Dez is back, and Castle can just be a crappy quarterback that throws it up to Dez and hopes that something magical happens. So I think it might be closer than it has been in the past year with these terrible Dallas quarterbacks just doing nothing. But ultimately, I think that Philly's going to go down there and know that they need to take care of business to kind of snuff Dallas' season out. So I'm going to stick with Philly.
History from the useless stats department says the Cowboys have won 5 of their past 7. The Cowboys did win their earlier matchup this year in September, 20-10. Last year at Dallas, the Eagles pulled out a big win, 33-10, but Mark Sanchez was the quarterback, not Sam Bradford. You know, it's interesting. There's been a lot of talk about Sam Bradford in the Slack. Sam Bradford just isn't going to be that guy. And I don't think Sam Bradford necessarily has to be that guy. In the NFL these days, I mean, the Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Peyton Mannings of the world are hard to come by. And I just don't see any of those type of quarterbacks right now amongst the crop of young quarterbacks that are playing right now. I mean, do we still think Andrew Luck has a chance to develop into that? I mean, he's certainly not showing it this season. What do you think about that, Ron?
I mean, Andrew Luck seems to be regressing, but again, I'm going to point to his situation. When it was just more of some team issues, he seemed to be able to get by there. I mean, he was winning his division, although it was weak. He was getting to the AFC Championship game with a horrible O-line and not a great defense. But now that everything with the coach, the GM, all that stuff has started to collapse around him as well, he has shown regression. I agree with you, though. There's maybe 5 elite quarterbacks that can put their team on their back and go get wins on a consistent basis. And that's it. So these people that want to complain about the Bradfords of the world, the Tannehills of the world, the fans that are saying, why don't we have this, why don't we have that, those guys are so rare, and 2 or 3 of them are really old, honestly, and only have a few years left. I mean, we're getting into the mediocre bunch of quarterbacks here, and maybe someone will emerge. I just don't know who. I don't see it yet.
Davey, you've got a younger quarterback that I haven't started to believe in yet. The question is, you know, do you think you've got an elite quarterback that's growing right now?
Elite? I mean, I would bet against elite because, like everybody's kind of already said, those guys are hard to come by. But a usable one for the distant future, maybe. Yeah, I mean, like he certainly keeps on getting better. And one of the things that we never saw out of the last crop of castaway junk that we've had come through Minnesota, he tends to rise to the occasion at the end of the game, which is one of those things I hate saying, but like he actually can make throws that win you a game rather than just keep checking down to the, you know, swing guy outside and make non, you know, difficult throws downfield. He'll try. And, you know, he came back against Chicago and did something pretty awesome at the end of that game, throwing digs and downfield to Charles Johnson. It was fun to watch. So, you know, he'll take chances and make good throws, and that's something that we haven't seen since obviously Favre, and then all the way back to Dante Culpepper. So he may not ever turn into, you know, one of those top guys, but I don't think you need him to. You know, you can win with a Matt Ryan or a Tony Romo or, you know, one of those second tier guys if you have an awesome defense, and Zimmer's turning our team into one of those elite defense teams. So I don't know. I'm optimistic that he'll be good enough. We don't really need the next Peyton Manning or Tom Brady. We just need somebody just below that.
And Ron mentioned these second-tier guys are going to be first-tier guys in a matter of, you know, 2 or 3 years. So
yeah,
it's going to be all about the team game more so than the elite quarterback game. You know, and the Patriots aren't going to be, you know, the Tom Brady-led Patriots forever, as much as we Patriot fans would like to believe that that's going to be the case. But yeah,
if you scratch him out, and it'll just be Rodgers on top pretty clearly, and then everybody else. I mean, like, suddenly Romo will be one of the top five quarterbacks pretty handedly.
Yeah.
As much as people cringe at that, I think it's pretty clear. I mean, he'll be one of the – it'll be like the Romos and Ryans and Roethlisbergers, and, you know, they're all kind of similarly – decent quarterbacks.
So when you look at your team and you project into the future, if you've got one of those quarterbacks that is currently in that second tier, or maybe is in that third tier growing towards that second tier, you're going to be looking at a top tier quarterback in the next couple of years. And then if you have enough weapons or a solid nucleus surrounding him, you know, your team is going to be one of those that's going to be tough to compete against. And I think that's what we're sort of looking at with the Vikings. We were hoping to see in the Dolphins, and maybe Dan Campbell is the guy to steer that ship, Ron. I don't know. But I would think that the Dolphins are hoping that they've got a strong nucleus. It's just a matter of getting them all to play in that direction.
Yeah, we're going to find out here in these next few games, because they've been so up and down. They've either been, in the last 5 games, they've either been blown out or they have blown out the team they played. There has been no in-between with them in the last 5 games, so let's see what happens. But I'm going to throw a name out at quarterback that I think could end up being a totally elite, put the team on my back, I'm going to win it for you guys, and that's Jameis Winston. I could see that in the next 3 years, that happening. He's really the only one right now that pops in my head.
I hear people say that, and for some reason I just don't see it. I don't know why. I haven't watched him enough, but I don't buy it.
Yeah, I haven't seen enough of the Tampa Bay Bucks this season to see if that's the case. There's certainly nothing before this season that I would have said that. So, I mean, I don't know. I can't go against you, Ron. But a lot of
this conversation... I've seen like most FSU games, and I've seen almost every Tampa game this year, because that's actually the market I'm in. I get the Tampa games.
Hmm. Well, a lot of this conversation is stuff that we'll definitely be talking about in the off season. We do have one more game to preview for you folks, and it is the Monday night football game, the Chicago Bears at the San Diego Chargers. Two of the older guys that are in that tier two, tier three quarterback, that being Jay Cutler and Phillip Rivers. I know Jay Cutler gets a lot of flack, and a lot of it is deserved. But at the same time, I cannot not believe that Jay Cutler doesn't have the skills to get it done, because he's shown that he has the skills to get it done. From the useless stats department, the Bears have won 5 of their past 6 against the Chargers. Now, the last time they played was in 2011. So I don't know. I'm gonna mull this pick over a little bit more. Ron, why don't you tell me what you think? Bears, Chargers.
I'm going to go Bears on this one. I'm not a believer in the Chargers at all. I have not been a believer in the Chargers since before the season started. I don't know what we anybody sees in that team, and I think they show that on the field. I think the Bears have been a little better than people have given them credit for, and they've got some people coming back. So, you know, Alshon Jeffrey playing a little better now. I'll go the Bears. I don't think they're going to blow them out by any means, but I think they get the win.
Davey?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Chargers, but I agree with you, Ram, that the Bears are not nearly as bad as people think. They keep getting ranked in like the bottom half of the 20s in everybody's little power rankings, useless power rankings, but they're not that bad. They keep losing games.
They are 2-5.
So, yeah, they have a terrible record, but they've played competitively. You know, they get sort of unlucky at the end of games, and they're harder to beat than a 2-5 team should be. So, I mean, you are what your record is, so ultimately they're a bad team. But they're closer than a 2-5 team looks to be on paper. And I also agree with you, Pod, that Cutler's not that bad a quarterback. He makes a lot of – he's like a poor man's Brett Favre. Like, he'll lose you a lot of games, but he can beat you. He can definitely go downfield and beat you. Like, he'll make hard throws, and he'll force it in there with a talented arm. Like, he can squeeze it into a hole that you think, what? How the heck did he do that? And dagger you at the end of a game, and it's devastating. And as a Vikings fan that has not won in Soldiers Field since, gosh, I think since I was in college until last week, we've watched it happen a lot. So they're not that bad, and I could see them winning, but I'm still going to pick the Chargers because I just think the Bears seem to stumble over themselves too much this year, so I'm sticking with the Chargers.
I did forget that Matt Forte is banged up right now and is most likely not going to play in this game. NumberFire has San Diego's chances of covering the 4 points at 46.4%. And so, once again, I'm going to do something I rarely do. I'm going to take the Chargers to win this game, but not cover. And in my pool, it's a 3.5-point spread. I'm going to have the Chargers win by a field goal. So that's what I'm doing. It's crazy. It's stupid. It's wrong. It's everything you should not do if you're a professional gambler. Fortunately, I'm not a professional gambler. So you can take that advice as you see fit. Ron and Davey, thanks for joining me today. I'd thank Patrick, but he's not here with us, so I can't thank him, and thus he shall feel shame.
Thanks, Jake. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
If you guys disagree with anything that we said here today, if you want to chime in on that, you know, second tier, third tier, first tier quarterback conversation that we had, send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also apply to be a super fan. If there's a super fan you haven't heard from in a long time, that probably means there is a super fan or their job is up and you could steal it away from the super fan who currently has that job. So send us those applications, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And on Facebook, you can see all the write-ups. You just go to facebook.com/NFU Podcast. By the way, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a review, a rating and a review. That would be fantastic, people. We need more people to find out about us. And it seems like the special guests we've had the past couple weeks have helped in that department. But we need more of you to be listening to this show. So share it. Share it with your friends. It's not like we're giving away secrets that only you and you yourself can hold on to. Share it. Please, please share it. And on that note, normally I would end with Jeff Fisher. He's unavailable this week. So I'll just tell you, there you have it.